So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes.
Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F-35A.
Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
Wisconsin judges resolved 17,544 divorce cases last year, according to our state courts, and often the most emotional issues are child support and child custody when a couple splits up. A special study committee spent between, August 28th and February 11th meeting on the issue. So I'm so glad the chair and vice chair of that group are coming in to talk about their recommendations. They've recommended 11 bills. I want to thank Representative Robert Brooks, who is a Republican, who represents the 60th District. He's from Saukville. He's the chair of the Legislative Council Study Committee on Child Placement. And Senator Lena Taylor, Democrat from the 4th District, is the vice chair of that Legislative Council Study Committee. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
It's a very important issue. Let's talk about it 10,000 feet first. What's wrong with our current laws?
I'll let you start.
Well, I mean, I think the real issue is that we're, in some ways, maybe penalizing, it feels like, the children, families. Mm-hmm. The system is a little awkward, I'll say, since most people who are coming in are individuals who are doing pro se work. And so we really need to make, meaning that they're
thank
not
you.
Represented by,
thank you, attorney.
By lawyers.
Thank you.
And so creating a system that realizes like what our numbers are and how we can make that run more efficiently and effectively, I mean, that's really what I would say we spent a lot of our time trying to figure out.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say just with any relationship, communication. And I think there was a real, whether it started off for me with a lot of fathers reaching out and then a lot of mothers reaching out and feeling disenfranchised by the system because of a lack of communication and clarity from the courts as to, as you said, so many people represent themselves, they just felt lost in the system. So we went through hundreds of issues, literally, and came up with 11 that I think are going to provide some really good clarity and direction for the courts going forward.
Before we go through five of those specific 11 bills that are now pending in the legislature, let me just follow up question. Biggest surprise from your work as the vice chair, Senator?
I'm going to be really honest, is the number of issues that exist. Really, I was a little surprised. I was very surprised in a way, but because I'm a lawyer, I kind of already knew this. Mm-hmm. The number of people who come through the system not represented. The number of people who are not married trying to decide these issues all were challenging.
And
but I also will say this, another area of great surprise, and it was a positive, is how much people, even who weren't necessarily on the same sides of issues, were willing to talk and fight it out, for lack of a better way to say it, talk it out, so that we could get to solutions to help our system work better. That was a pleasant surprise.
Surprise. The biggest surprise, Representative?
Yeah, I would say is the way the committee came together.
Yeah.
Because this has been a very divisive issue. It started off with the presumption is child's best interest or equal placement.
Yeah.
And we need to get into those issues. There's a lot of passion, and we had a very diverse group, and everybody came together and were civil, and it wasn't a Republican or a Democrat thing or a mother-father thing or the courts against, you know, pro se defendants. Everybody came together with a genuine interest in improving, and I was taken back by that a little bit. And Senator Taylor has been a great partner, and I don't take that lightly, you know, so we wouldn't have got done with what we did without coming together with some bipartisan legislation. So I was really impressed with that.
When I looked up the charge or the mission statement for the Ledge Council Committee, it dealt with two issues, which we're going to get into in some depth. But there's this statement that you're going to have to explain it to me, Ms. Lawyer. The mission statement, consider rebuttable presumption, I can hardly pronounce it, consider the rebuttable presumption that equal placement is in the child's best interest. Translate, please, Senator.
You know, this goes to what the representative was saying, and I want to give him credit also. He was amazing as a chair of a committee. And the fathers that have come together is like, look, we want it to be like the standard when you go in, that equal placement.
Mm-hmm.
That fathers and mothers, both parents get an equal amount of time. And in the end, that's kind of what we thought we were going to come in to deal with, was just kind of that legislation. And to be very candid with you, I think we learned that the best interest of the kid, we may think it means both parents, but there are many factors that have to come into play, like domestic violence, you know, very candidly, if everybody has a stable environment, there's so many other factors. So I think we thought we were coming in to deal with equal placement. We actually came in, I think, and found out by getting information that maybe there are some models that work well where you encourage parents to work together, but it doesn't mean it's going to be an equal amount of time.
Is equal placement currently the standard, Representative?
No, it's not.
It's not.
No,
it's not codified in state law?
No, it's somewhat assumed, but the presumption is best interest of the child. And a number of us on that committee actually sponsored legislation in the past to move towards equal placement as the predominant presumption. But as Senator Taylor, we moved off that because the evidence is overwhelming. Overwhelming. It's unquestionable that having two parents involved in a child's life is always in the best interest of the child and in the best interest of the whole family dynamic. So it was easy for us to come back and say, if everything's equal, but you quickly learn is no two home situations are the same.
Right.
And
so
when you
many
look
varying
at the
circumstances.
Yeah, and it could be access to school, work schedules, all kinds of things. So I quickly learned it wasn't necessarily about 50-50 placement. A lot of times you need to take out placement and use the word access, especially with today's technology. Me as a father having some quality time, you know, on Facebook or being able to pick up the phone or having my child be able to pick up the phone. You know, I'm not in a split family, but having that access to both parents is critical to that family dynamic and succeeding. And the evidence is overwhelming. So we needed to try and get to that balance between best interest of the child should always be number one. I don't think anybody can disagree with that, but trying to move to that 50-50 placement whenever possible.
And then the second sentence in the mission statement that I want to just ask you to explain. The committee may also consider whether the current standard for determining child support adequately and provides for the support of children. What is the current standard?
Well, it depends. If it's one child, two, three, or more, but there's a percentage of the non-custodial parents' revenue that is supposed to be paid in child support. So it's about 18%. Is what it is if you have one kid. It's, I want to say, 21% if you have two, 23%. But then it depends on if you're sharing placement and if that placement is shared but not 50-50, just a number of different factors. And so some people believe that there should be a cap and that at some point how much is paid in support should just be stopped because you've got enough to support the kid. Those are some of the conversations that we heard.
So is the current standard a non-custodial parent can pay 18% of his income if they're supporting one child? Do I have this right? And then 23% if they're supporting two children?
Right. And it's a sliding
I think it's like
scale.
21%, yeah. 23% if it's more than if it's three children. But it depends on the amount of time they're staying.
But what I learned in this process, and I think what parents are slowly going to learn, is the state has done, I think, an admirable job in determining how they allocate that time. It used to be where you put your head on the pillow, you know, those 8 or 12 hours counted as a half day. Mm-hmm. We're moving away from that because that's not quality time. So it's more of a look at quality time and actual time with your children. So when your kids are at school, neither parent have access. When they're sleeping, neither parent have access. So they're taking a more critical look when they look at that placement, when they look at support. And I think I was shocked by that a little bit, that we're moving in that direction, which really I think has been a big pushback from a lot of the groups that we've heard from over the years.
Are these percentages, 18%, 21%, 23%, are they now in state law or are they part of rules?
I want to say maybe it's rules, but either way it goes, those are that's the standard that's presently in place. But to go to what Representative was just sharing with you is where before, if you had your kid on, say, a Wednesday night, right, you might not get account for that. it might not be accounted for because you had your kid on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're spending dinner time and some other time, you actually, it's a certain block of time if you're spending with your kid. It's being calculated a little differently. We learned that, I would say, through the process of the committee. Because back in the day, it was, where did you lay your head?
Oh, okay.
Where did the kid lay their head?
And it's not that easy anymore, is it?
It really isn't. It really isn't. And technology and so many other things. But let's go back to what you asked about, you know, shared placement or equal placement. It's about quality time with the kid and who's actually getting that time and what is that time like and how do you make accessibility happen. And I think what we learned in the midst of this process is that it's good when we're doing things to help the parents to learn to work together. That's the best interest of the child.
And to me, it all comes back to communication, and we're going to get into the specifics of some of the bills, but talking about providing an actual useful parenting plan and having those meaningful discussions at some point, having the courts actually give a written statement as to why you're not getting equal play, all of those things I think are going to provide greater clarity and trust in the system. Because I don't think the system was as flawed as maybe I thought it was, but the communication was terribly flawed, and the justification when you left court that you felt like you got a fair deal, I think was really lacking.
Getting ready for this show, there's two other concepts that I want to explain before we talk about five specific bills. Help me understand the concept of cost sharing. Okay, ready? Go.
Fire.
I'll let you take that one in the beginning.
As far as cost sharing?
I've lived it.
Yeah, and I haven't, so it's a little more difficult for me. You know, and I think, again, the courts have done a good job when it comes to placement and support payments and cost sharing. Are you talking about?
Well, cost sharing, the budget of the resident parent or the non-custodial parent, living costs or income or both. So I'm just trying to get some clarity.
Well, you know, I was actually just talking with a woman who's divorcing, and her soon-to-be ex-husband is paying $500 in support.
And
monthly.
Thank you.
And he believes that amount should be sufficient to also help with rent and everything else. Now they have three children. Cost sharing is that support dollars for the children,
right,
or is that, you know, am I looking at all the other expenses that you have to pay for that house?
For a household.
Exactly.
Right. Thank you.
And so one of the things that I think the custodial parent often, you know, feels is, well, you know, look, I've got to provide. But the non-custodial parent says, well, you would have had to have a house anyway. And so, you know, why am I paying why is all the rent, you know, being considered? So it really is what things, right, do they share in cost? Now, let's go back to something that often is a problem, child care costs, school costs. All of those are not costs that would necessarily be reimbursed. School costs is not necessarily something that parents often are getting splitting equally. Medical costs, yes.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you hit on that because that was a question I had. How often did the cost of medical care for a child come up as your council study committee studied these issues? Is it surface?
It was not really.
No?
It was not really an issue.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think we quickly learned that the way we handle child support and cost sharing is pretty effective.
In Wisconsin.
And the way we looked at it, we looked at what other states were doing, and a lot of other states are doing what we're doing. Sometimes they have a different name. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they blend things a little different. But at the end of the day, we didn't have any pushback from anybody on the committee as to the way, you know, we actually put support placement in.
The only
area that we did have someone say, like, you know, that we saw that we needed to, like, divide up is when we did family support,
right,
where we basically took child support and we took maintenance and we put those things together. We created our kind of own category in that way that we said we should get rid of.
Okay. The only other term before we get to the five bills, the concept of income sharing. Is there something we need to understand about income sharing, the non-custodial parent's income, number of children to be supported? Was that the concept of it?
So the non-custodial parent may have more than one household that they're...
I see. Okay.
That they're dealing with. Or they may have in the household that they're in children in that household. I mean, in the end, we didn't really give a lot of lenience to that concept. Yeah. We kind of feel like if you have children, you should...
You're responsible.
Well, congratulations. Your Ledge Council Study Committee voted out 11 bills. They're now pending before the legislature.
Right.
And I asked you to summarize the five most important. So now let's go down those. Assembly Bill 94, reduction of child support payments during incarceration. Why is this a important potential change?
Can I take that one?
Absolutely. This is your issue.
This is definitely an issue that was a large concern for me. We kind of put individuals who are in custody in a position where we're allowing them to dig a hole the whole time that they're in custody with the amount that they have to pay in child support.
They fall further and further behind.
Exactly.
And then there's cost assessed on...
And interest and everything else assessed on it.
Okay.
Versus saying they're going in custody, they're not going to be able to pay that $1,200 a month anymore for child support. And so that order is not, it doesn't go away, but that order is kind of like stayed, for lack of a better way to say it, during the time that person is in custody, if it is past 120 days, I think is the days.
So the meter doesn't run while someone is in prison.
Exactly.
And this is so important to you because Wisconsin, unfortunately, incarcerates more African-American men than anyone in the
nation. And Native American.
But
one of the things that we found out is one of the places that we have our largest failure to pay has been for people who are in custody. So it really puts our counties also in a bad situation in regards to their stats. So it really also gives, I think, individuals when it comes time for reentry, it gives them a better playing field, I would argue, to be able to come out and work instead of feeling like you're already snowed in, you know, and you've got to somehow or another dig through that, and you've got to have enough to be able to have somewhere to work and support those same kids because your child support order, we want to give it back to you.
So the meter would stop on child support once someone enters prison?
Once they've been sentenced and they're going to be there for
180 days.
At least 180
right.
days.
Yeah, we debated between 120 and 180, and 180 became the new number.
And the meter would, again, once someone is released,
correct.
That would...
Right.
Correct.
Did you have support from all members of the council committee for this one?
Yeah. We did. Okay. And again, I came in as a reluctant partner on this one, thinking it was maybe a soft-on-crime measure, and we're letting people off by going to jail. But we made exceptions. Like if they're going to jail because of a crime committed against the mother, then it doesn't, you know, so you can't be convicted of domestic abuse or child abuse and then have that waived, you know. And if you have the ability to pay, it stays in place. So,
exactly.
And the facts, again, were overwhelming that by getting rid of that burden in the states that have done this, and it's been a federal issue, so we're really kind of trying to mirror some federal standards here, and we have actual amendment to say that in the bill that will be coming out that will, you know, mirror, there won't be anything in conflict with federal standards. But the evidence, again, was overwhelming. I guess the percentage of reunifying those parents without having that barrier of being behind 6 months, a year, two, three, four, 5 years sometimes,
right.
or longer,
right.
of all that back child support, taking that barrier away helped the parents get together again.
Okay. Thank you for a summary.
In the best interest of the child, and that's what this is all about.
That was a summary of Assembly Bill 94, Assembly Bill 98. Reasons must be stipulated when a parent is awarded less than 25% of custody. That's not now the law, and why is this a needed change?
This goes back to what Representative said about communication. I'll let you tee this one.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, this is the biggest complaint we heard is, why didn't I get joint custody? Why don't we have equal placement? And in state statute, there is a list of factors that judges and court commissioners are supposed to use to determine custody. But they just made their decision, and you would walk out of court going, I only got every other weekend, and I don't know why. And why didn't I get equal placement? So we started off with 25%. Quite frankly, I may offer up an amendment when we have the hearing to try and get to 50%.
50%.
To say, if you don't award equal placement, you should give a justification to the parent that doesn't get 50%.
Are judges supporting this?
They did.
They did.
Because in the end, I think the judges often felt like they were telling people why, but I think that's not always necessarily how it feels on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just a way of making sure that someone is getting like that stop. Explain why you did it if you are at a specific threshold.
So some judges felt they were explaining it, others maybe not so much. And this says thou shall.
Right. Exactly.
And you may move the 25% to 50.
I'm going to try.
Do you support 50?
I mean, I do.
Sounds like an auction.
In the end, I think it really is just saying, if it isn't in the best interest of the child for there to be time that is equal with both parents, why is that? And pause enough, court, to make sure that the parents understand. That's all this bill really is saying. And since equal placement was one of the big issues, right. I could see why at the 50% mark it matters.
Okay. Another bill that you're recommending that's pending is Assembly Bill 99. Require parents who are splitting up to submit proposed parenting plan 10 days before a required mediation. Now, parenting plans, as I read the study committee materials, have been required, but now this really moves up the process, doesn't it, significantly?
Yes, it does. As a matter of fact, I have to take responsibility for doing the legislation to try to make the parenting plan a requirement. Well, I made it a requirement in that if individuals didn't put it in, that the judge would have to use that parenting plan to, you know, base their decision on.
Mm-hmm.
Courts didn't like that.
Oh.
They didn't like that. However, the reason that we still believe that parenting plans are important is because, again, it's communication. We believe that if I do a plan and the other parent does a plan, we might actually find out we agree. But you never get that if you're not forced
right.
to think about what's that plan going to be for how you do things.
Is a parent who's splitting, do they now have to submit a parenting plan after a mediation? Because it seems to me you're now mandating it prior to the mediation session.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, they were supposed to do that afterwards, and the judges were supposed to look at it, but that wasn't happening. And again, the evidence was overwhelming that states that had parenting plans in place prior to mediation and prior to those discussions, mediation was way more successful, which takes a lot of burden off the courts. So what we found is, yes, we're adding some more work to the courts by having them give us those, you know, if we're not going to give equal placement, but we think we're going to get better results by having the parenting plan required before mediation.
So, okay. All right. Assembly
as well
bill.
As I, one last thing, as well
sure.
as I think it'll be a good tool for the judge to be able to look at and
right.
to kind of see to where the family
compare
is
the
at.
Two.
Exactly.
Yep. Right. Assembly Bill 100, which just surprised me. Judges may consider, take notice, isn't that the legal term, Your Honor?
That is. I'm not appointed
counselor,
yet.
Counselor. Yeah. Judges may consider CCAP records of domestic violence, crime against children, or injunctions. They can't now?
You know, I think, again, it's communication. I think access is not necessarily, has it always been, something that has been easily accessible. But I think now it's saying, look, this is something that you should look at and something for sure that you can use to consider. Representative?
Right. I was shocked to find out that while I think best practice is that they do that,
mm-hmm.
they were technically, well, not technically, they were prohibited from doing it, but we also found out a lot of them were doing it. So it just made sense, you know, if Senator Taylor and I, you know, were going through this process and maybe out of her fear, she doesn't want to say that we've had issues in the past.
Okay.
And if the judge doesn't have the ability to look and the judge doesn't ask and maybe doesn't get a straight answer, quite frankly, because of fear, you know, those are critical issues, and we tried really working hard with the domestic violence groups to come up with some ways around
yes.
getting as much of that information to the judge to make those decisions when it comes to placement.
But now, do the domestic violence groups have concerns about this?
They like the fact that the court will be able to
take
look
notice?
At the information and
right.
take notice.
There's always a concern that
they would like it to be a little more sturdy. I mean, stern, I think. You know, yeah. like it, yeah.
And there's always concern, what else are they going to look at? Because our bill is very specific to domestic violence, child abuse, those kinds of things. I think there's some concern always that are they going to go back and look, you know, that you were in possession of, you know, narcotics at one time or something. Look at other things, drunk driving and all these other issues. I think there's been a little concern about that, but our bill is very narrow.
It sounds like it's very specific. Domestic violence, crime against children, and injunctions.
Correct.
One of the things
and not OWIs?
No, I mean,
excuse me, Senator.
No, you're fine.
No, go ahead.
You're fine. I was just going to say some people wanted to see pets included, and you know, so as I said, some individuals wanted things to be a little more stern because there's a correlation, you know, that is that's been shown or believed to exist between individuals who have not been appropriate to pets. Mm-hmm. You know, what they would do. Okay. So the point is that this is saying this is an okay thing for the court to do, to take these things into consideration, because they're talking about placement, they're talking about all of those things that, you know, really do go to the safety of the family.
And the fifth bill I want to highlight, recovering birth costs from fathers in certain circumstances. Now, this is the paternity issue. And when you look up this, the number of times that there were judges resolved paternity cases, 10,096 paternity cases were resolved statewide last year. This was a number that surprised me. What's the goal of Assembly Bill 103?
This one is fun.
Well, to me, this is just a common sense fairness and equity thing, that if I, as a father, have a child with somebody, that I should bear part of those birth costs and not have state taxpayers and have it come out of a program that's already in the need way exceeds the amount of revenue that we have going into that.
Yes.
So to take even $17 million, for instance, out of that, that could go to help truly needy people because we don't think a father should be paying those costs. And the cost program, it was changed through a rule process to say we don't think it should be, the father should be have to be reimbursed if they're intact. Well, intact meaning not married, but maybe sharing the same address. Well, how do you verify that somebody's actually living together? And it was crazy to me not to have fathers responsible. And we were very considerate, and the rules say that if you're a father who's also on a program or has low income, then you don't pay. So you're not asking people to pay if they don't have the ability to pay.
Okay.
But if I clearly have the ability to pay, why wouldn't I reimburse up to $3,000? And it's over a number of years. It's 0% interest. The average claim was $500. Milwaukee County waived a lot of them because both parents, you know, were part of the program. So do you want to elaborate?
I was just going to say it was funny because I came in like, you know, well, everybody needs to pay. The mom needs to pay the birth cost. The dad needs to pay the birth cost. And everybody needs to pay. And then I came, we got information, and we found out, oh, well, it's being waived mostly for moms if they're on government assistance.
Yeah.
That it's being waived, the mom's amount, but they're splitting the amount of what the cost is. So I thought the dad was paying all of the costs. And so it was funny to find out, well, that's not true. So if the birth cost, let's say, was $6,000, they were only charging dad part of that cost,
okay,
not the whole $6,000, which is what I thought. And I said, well, mom should pay a cost and dad should pay some. So then the other issue is they were saying intact. Well, because somebody says that they live together, why should that matter that the birthing costs aren't paid? So we were able to address that. But if dad is, like the representative said, economically not in a position to be able to do it, or mom not in an economic position to do it, then they can't do it. But either way it goes, those birth costs go back into the very programs that we're talking about, getting people child support,
right,
if all of these things that we're talking about enforcing, and for the family court to work. So
okay, we're almost out of time, but we're 3 months into the new session. Are these five bills going to pass? Do they have any high-profile opponents that you've heard of?
No.
No. I think a couple may need to be tweaked. The one we just talked about, we want to put in statute so it can't be changed through the rule process. The, you know, birth costs need to be covered 50% by the father based on their ability to pay. What our bill didn't do was codify what's in rules as to how that payment is determined, mm-hmm, and it's determined on a sliding scale. And I heard from some legislators that said, if you bring in that payment schedule and codify it in state statute, then they can be supportive. But we don't want the rules to change, because right now, like I said, 25% of cases in Milwaukee pay no birth costs.
Okay.
So
maybe a final question. If these five bills, well, if all 11 pass, How significant will these changes be, Senator?
I think they're huge. I think each of them, for different reasons, will help the family court system work better. I think individuals who are reentering, as we work to connect people to jobs when they reenter from the system, I think it's going to be huge for people to have, for lack of a better said, a clean slate, not one where for 10 years or 5 years or 3 years or 20 years or however long they were in custody, that they have a support amount that was accumulating when they very well could not make that amount of money.
Right.
I think these are great bills. I think the parenting plan is huge, and I think it's going to help communication in the system.
Yeah, I agree.
Mr. Chair, last word?
Yeah, I think that ability for me to leave the courtroom knowing why I did or did not get 50% or equal placement is almost like a business plan for my family and my. I know these are things I need to improve on if I want to get equal placement. And these were the criteria that maybe were weighted against me. And what can I do to improve those? Instead of walking out of court, not knowing, not having the answers, now I have a clear delineation as to where maybe I as a parent was falling short or where the court perceived I was falling short. And I can work on those things.
Great.
So I think it's a great thing.
Okay, thank you. These are the recommendations of the Legislative Council Study Committee on Child Placement. I want to thank the chair, Representative Robert Brooks, Republican from the 60th District, and Vice Chair, Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee, 4th District. Thank you so much. Important changes.
Thank you again.
Oh, there's that handshake. There we go. Thank you.
And look at it. We're matching. And
we, absolutely.
It was just telepathy.
It's magic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seriously.